accession number 12334, Real 2.
Mr. Day, Real 2. Did you have any officers on board the Carly Raff that you were on?
No, we didn't have any officers. We had a... I think I saw an officer's coat. Looked like a commander's coat with red... red between the bands. But there was no. He must have been gone over the side, I would think.
So
there was a lot fell over the side. There was one chap sitting on the end with a steel helmet on. I don't know how he'd managed to swim out with a steel helmet on, but and the chap next to him flung his arms out and it knocked him over the side, and that's the last we saw of him.
Were people going mental?
No, not that I saw.
Was anybody taking charge in the raft?
No, not really, no. I think one of them was a chief petty officer, but he didn't have much to say. I don't know what his name was.
What did you think of the treatment that the Norwegians gave you when they rescued you?
Oh, that was excellent. Yes, they did everything they could for us. Very kind.
Were they able to speak English?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think they could speak English.
So you couldn't gather what had happened to them?
No. They were coming away from Norway. They were going to the Faroes. But that's about all I know about them.
How long did it make... take you to make a complete recovery from it?
Well, I was under observation for 10 years afterwards, so I went to see... when I joined the Formidable, the surgeon commander, I think it was, he sent for me to go up to London to... see him to see how I was getting on, because I think he was doing a research on it, as they called it, immersion foot. It was very similar to frostbite, really. And I think it was something they hadn't had a lot of experience with, and they were trying to see what treatment would have turned out best.
Were you satisfied with the treatment that you got?
Yes, I was, yes. Yes, it was very painful in hospital because until the circulation sorted itself out. They used to give us jabs of morphine occasionally to kill the pain.
Did you have any hard feelings towards the Germans who'd sunk you, or did you regard it just as bad luck?
Well, I suppose I did regard it as bad luck, really, but I thought they ought to have picked some up, but I suppose it's probably a good thing they didn't. But if they had picked survivors up, there'd probably been a lot more survivors. But I believe they thought there was submarines in the area, so they, and the Scharnhorst was damaged, so they went away.
Did you see anything of the British destroyers, the Ardent and the Acasta?
Yes, only when they were laying the smoke screens around the ship. But I didn't see them after that.
Can we go on to the Formidable now, because you yes. were on that carrier towards the end of the war with the British Pacific Fleet.
Yes.
And can you tell me what your experiences were with her?
Well, yes, I joined her in at Ross Eyres in about August 1944, and we went, got as far as Gibraltar, and there was a big wheel had stripped in the engine room, so we had to go and dry dock there, and they had to cut the big hole in the flight deck and hoist this big gear wheel out and replace it. And in the meantime, the squadrons and myself were flown down to Alexandria to wait for the ship to come on down from there. And well, I suppose we stayed there a couple of weeks or so. And then we picked the ship up again at Alexandria and went through the Suez and out to the Pacific. And we was at some islands at Sakishima Gunto when we got the first kamikaze on board. And that landed right in the middle of the flight deck. And it had a bomb on it. And it killed about 20 people in the island. It peppered that with shrapnel. And it made a small hole in the flight deck, and some shrapnel went down and burst a steam pipe, which stopped the ship for a short time while they repaired that. But they pushed this, all the debris of the suicide plane over the side, and they filled a hole up on the flight deck with some wood, and we carried on operation, which rather surprised the Americans, because their carriers had wooden flight decks, and when the kamikazes hit them, they went right through and set the ships on fire. It was a major disaster. But with the armoured flight decks of the British ships, that didn't happen. And then the next kamikaze we had landed amongst the parked aircraft on the rear end of the flight deck, and because it set them on fire. And that didn't cause the ship any damage. Once the fire was put out, they pushed all the damaged aircraft over the side, and we carried on operating.
Was that off the Sakishima Gunto?
No, I don't think that one was. I can't remember where that one was. But we went to, we went back to Sydney and had some repairs done afterwards. And we were ashore a few weeks there. Well, in the harbour there, the ship went and dried up. And then we went back to Japan and operated in the Inland Sea of Japan. And it might have been there where we got the second kamikaze.
What?
We were bombing Tokyo from the Inland Sea of Japan.
What was the second kamikaze attack like?
Well, that was very similar to the first one. Really, all the ship's guns were going, everything had, but it still came through and landed. It landed in the amongst the parked aircraft on the aft end of the flight deck. and they were all set on fire then.
What did the kamikaze planes look like as they came down?
Well, I didn't see them because my action station was on the flight deck in charge of a fire party. I was a petty officer then. And you couldn't see where they were coming from. You didn't know what direction they were coming from, or you just hoped that they weren't going to come in where you were. It's quite alarming, that was. But the second one, no, the one with the bomb on it, it blew me through a hatch on the end of the boat deck. But,
did you suffer from that?
No, I didn't suffer any, no. No, there was no damage to me.
What was the job of the fire party?
Well, mainly to, you know, any fires along the boat deck, and to also that you could spray the sprinklers in the hangars. From there, there was big wheels you turned on to spray the hangar if there was a fire in the hangar, which there was eventually, you know, just before the war ended. There was the aircraft had landed, and there was shells left in the gun that had been cleared properly. They're supposed to have been empty just before the aircraft was taken down to the hangar. But for some reason, there was one left in the gun. And when the electrician came along to test the firing circuit, it went off and went into the aircraft in front. And it was an incendiary, so it set fire to that. And there was a terrific fire in the hangar then. And they nearly lost the ship over that.
Did you have any other means of fighting fires apart from those sprinklers?
Oh, yes, there was hoses and foam machines and things like that, and high-pressure water and all that.
What were the foam machines?
Well, they were connected up to a salt water, I think, and it was pumped in them, and they put this mixture into the machine, and it came out the nozzles then as a foam. I don't know what it was exactly made of, but very similar to the fire extinguishers that filled with foam.
What protective clothing did you have on?
Oh, I don't think we had any at that time. The guns crews always used to wear flash gear, but we didn't have any.
So you just had the normal naval uniform?
Yeah. I was wearing overalls at the time. Because I'd been running a Corsair up to test the engine on the after end of the flight deck. It was on an outrigger, and the smoke started coming up through the rear lift hatch. And somebody pointed down and rubbed their hands together like that to indicate that it was a fire down there. And so I stopped this engine and went down to the boat deck then, which was my action station. And then we had to turn the sprinklers on and off as it was ordered. And then there was people inside the hangar fighting it. They had quite a time of it. But they got it under control. There was torpedoes in there and bombs, I think, so it was a bit dangerous if it got, the fire got too much out of hand, it was liable to blow them up.
What was the Formidable like to live and work on as compared with the Glorious?
Oh, it was much better, much more modern ship. And that was built as a carrier, the Glorious was built as a cruiser in the early, or the first, well, during the First World War, I suppose, but in 1917 it was a cruiser, and then it was altered to an aircraft carrier. But I was on the Formidable to after the war. I think I left it in 1946. We went up to, they turned it into a hospital ship, emptied the hangars and had all sort of camp beds sort of on each side of the hangar, and we went up to Rabaul to get Australian prisoners of war that were prisoners of the Japanese, and also to Manila, and took them back to Australia. And some of those were in another state.
What state were they in?
Oh, very, and, you know, very emaciated. So they'd been on starvation diets, I think. And then there was, they brought service wives home to England, and we went back again to Australia and brought a lot of friends home. And that was just after the war ended. Right at the end of the war, there had been a hurricane or typhoon. We'd had to go south to get out of the way of it. And while we were there, away from Japan, then the war ended, so we were lucky then.